You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone. Welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cutt, joined, as usual, by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. We're going to cover the latest news and notes around baseball. We're going to talk about Patrick's most recent Is It Legit article, recap a few hitter and pitcher performances from the last week, and then talk about some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John. I'm doing pretty well. Happy to be back on the podcast after a week off. I enjoyed the time, and I'm currently moving, so I'm surrounded by boxes right now, but I'm happy to be back on, you know, a little distraction from all the moving, you know, all that work. How are you?
I'm doing all right. The Twins have not been doing well, so that's been very easy to kind of ignore the baseball side of how things are going. But yeah, I'm doing all right. Been more distracted by playoff hockey and playoff basketball, but it's a nice distraction from the Twins, who had a 3-2 lead going into the ninth inning, and then promptly the bullpen, of course, choked again, and we lost 5-3 to the Mariners. So, fantasy baseball is going all right, but real baseball is not going super great.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it. I saw the Twins had the lead, and I was like, oh, maybe we'll get a little more clarity on who's the closer. And I guess it was Orzy got the shot, and then he blew it. So no clarity there. It's still a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I was actually kind of surprised Connor Prelip, who I mentioned last week, that the Twins used him as a starter. But he's been looking good through two starts, so no complaints there. It just feels like there's going to be some young guys who inevitably get called up to the Twins to basically just replace some of these journeyman relievers. But we'll see how that all works, because right now it's not looking too great, and I don't really see a reason to bring up the young guys just to relieve, just to be in the bullpen if, like, hey, we're not going to be winning anyways.
Yeah, just got to enjoy, you know, Tosh Bradley still stringing really good starts together, and hopefully the Mick Abel injury is minor and, you know, he'll be back on the mound next month.
Exactly. Yeah. Tosh Bradley with 116 pitches today. I thought we turned back the clock like 15 minutes when I saw that stat.
That's bold.
Yeah. How are the Orioles doing? Are they, they're keeping on pace, right? In the AL East.
Yeah. They keep kind of seesawing between like 500 and one or two games under. It rained out today, so doubleheader tomorrow. Trevor Rogers just got put on the IL with an illness, which I don't know what's going on there. Hopefully it's, you know, just the minimum absence. But yeah, they're a little healthier. Adley is back. Tyler O'Neill's back, for whatever that's worth. A couple of relievers are on the way back. So slowly getting healthier. I don't feel, you know, super confident about the team, but I think that they can keep playing competitive games at least.
Yeah, as long as they're competitive and, you know, making some moves. I mean, obviously that the AL East is just a juggernaut, but yeah, it's a tough situation to be in that division.
Yeah, a couple other teams are starting slow though, so hopefully they can, you know, take advantage of that and start stacking some wins.
Yeah, that's definitely true. All right, well, before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We are on all of them: Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you listen. Make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we're going to jump right into injury news. And as you just mentioned, Trevor Rogers is now on the 15-day IL for illness, which seems like, I don't know, seems kind of weird to give a guy a 2-week break for being sick. You know, this might be more of a opportunity for Rogers to reset. But I know in general, just that the pitching staff for the Orioles hasn't been absolutely perfect. I mean, Rogers had a really good start to the season, but as someone who has Kyle Bradish on a couple teams, I've been somewhat disappointed by that as well. So obviously a big blow for the Orioles losing him. But I didn't necessarily see a corresponding move yet for the Orioles. Do you know who might get called up in his place?
Yeah, so the corresponding move, I think, was to just add another reliever for the time being. I think it might be Cade Povich when they need the fifth starter, just because Brandon Young's already up and Dean Kramer's on the IL too, so not a lot of options.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that works. I mean, Povich looked, I don't think he looked great, but he looked serviceable at least.
Yeah, he's had some moments.
Yeah. Another kind of important injury news, not because of who got hurt, but what could happen as a result. Javi Baez is going on the 10-day IL for a right leg injury, And when Parker Meadows got hurt earlier this season, a lot of people were thinking, hey, maybe this is Max Clark's opportunity to come up. That did not happen. But now Javi Baez is out, so now they're down two outfielders. So maybe Max Clark comes up. By the time this episode comes out, you know, that news might have already broken. But just some interesting thing there, especially if you're in like a weekly league like on NFC. You know, maybe Max Clark gets a game before Sunday's Fab runs, and then he's, you know, suddenly available to get picked up in leagues. But that's going to be kind of an interesting situation to follow right now. Casey Mize of the Tigers also on the IL for a right adductor strain. And this one's interesting because Justin Verlander is still kind of rehabbing injury with his hip. So it doesn't look like he's going to be the replacement for Mize. So it looks like maybe the next option coming up could be Sawyer Gibson Long, who, I mean, last year got a little bit of a helium, I think, in pitcherless circles. But injuries kind of hurt his season. If SGL does come up, do you have any opinion on whether he's kind of worth taking a look at?
I just want to see what it looks like first at the major league level. You know, always a little bit of intrigue there with him. And I did, you know, start in some spots last year. But it looks like velo is down maybe like a tick, half tick in AAA this year. So, yeah, I just want to see what it looks like first. He was five scoreless, though, in his most recent outing, at least, which is good to see.
Okay. In terms of some injury list returns, George Springer is back on the Blue Jays after dealing with a toe injury. I think I mentioned this last week in the roundup. But he is going to be playing through pain. I think that's basically what the Jays have said. So maybe that means less steal opportunities for him, but it's going to be nice to have his bat at least back in the lineup. Treya Savage returned yesterday, I believe, or Tuesday, I guess, in against the Red Sox. 5.1 innings, only three strikeouts, but no earned runs and only four hits. So a pretty solid start from him. Anything you liked from Savage's initial start here?
Yeah, I was actually listening to Rates and Barrels a little bit before this, and they were talking about how he leaned a little bit less on the slider, only 8% usage, it looks like. So I think it would be a little disconcerting to see him be just a fastball splitter guy, but clearly he's still, you know, those two pitches are solid enough for him to take advantage of kind of a struggling lineup, you know, in any circumstance. So, yeah, I think it would be nice to see Savage, you know, kind of widen out that mix a little and show the three pitches pretty evenly like he did last year. But, yeah, it's nice to see him, you know, get his season off and running, even if the start was a little delayed.
Yeah, and he did have a fun matchup against Peyton Toll, who I wish did a little bit better, but that's fine.
Yeah, down two ticks, pretty disappointing, especially all those people who spent hundreds and hundreds of Fab dollars on him. Got to be a little bummed out, but long season.
Yeah, I saw someone in NFC spend... I think it was on TGFBI. I spent $311 on Toll. I didn't have the opportunity to actually spend money on it because someone in my league already picked him up in TGFBI, which I was kind of annoyed by. But regardless, at least the good news for Savage, velocity is pretty much around the same as last year, at least on the four-seamer. Splitter and slider were down a couple ticks, but at least the fastball was about the same velocity.
Yep, and they're gonna need him. Those Blue Jays pitchers are dropping like flies right now.
Yeah, sounds like Barrios might be coming back soon, though. He just finished a rehab start, so we'll see if he ends up being a reinforcement. Brent Rooker came back a couple days back. I think with the A's, it's going to be so interesting because it's going to their batters are going to live and die by playing at home. Even though Rooker does have the power to, you know, be good outside of Sacramento. It just feels like they're just more premium pickups when they play at home as opposed to away. Rooker has yet to hit a homer in his two games, but I mean, that's not terribly surprising. He did kind of have a slow start to the season anyways, so we'll kind of see how he warms up. I mean, the injury was an oblique injury, and that's one of those things that it's always tough for hitters to deal with because it's just such a big part of you know, the kind of the hitting chain. But yeah, it's hopefully Rooker is able to get off to a stronger start as he comes back from injury.
Yeah, I was happy to, you know, see how quickly he returned from the oblique because I feel like usually it's a long-term absence, but his performance has been really bad. He's hitting 120, yeah, so some real contact issues, hoping he can figure that out as soon as possible.
Yeah, he I think it was just like a 2 or maybe 2.5 week stay at most for him, which, you know, it's a good thing, but also just hope he's not rushing back.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of other injury news, Gerrit Cole, he made his third rehab start in Double-A today. He did stretch out to 60 pitches, but because he's on the 15-day IL, the Yankees never moved him to the 60-day. So he is eligible to return kind of at any point, but I imagine the Yankees are still going to take some time with him, maybe get him up to 80 pitches before they bring him back to the majors. So I'd expect at least another rehab start before there's any sort of real news about him making it back to the majors. Tatsuya Yamai up to 59 pitches in his very first rehab start. But with him, because I would imagine the Astros are going to take some time to let him adjust. Obviously, he mentioned kind of the difficulty of moving to the United States and pitching here. So obviously some stuff for him to deal with, not just injury wise, but also, you know, just getting fitting with the team mentally. So would not be surprised if, even though he's up to 59 pitches, that the Astros take some time before bringing him back to the majors. And then Justin Steele, he was coming back from Tommy John surgery, but now it looks like he's dealing with a flexor strain, so he's been shut down in his rehab and his comeback from that. You know, Steele had a pretty decent season 2 years ago. I think when he finished, was it second in Cy Young voting or something like that? But regardless, last year, well, obviously he had Tommy John, so it was kind of a lost season for him. But it'll be interesting to see him, how he fits into the Cubs rotation. Obviously, they are being dealt with a big injury with Cade Horton going down earlier this year. But yeah, with Steele coming back, I'm sure that's probably something that the Cubs are looking forward to, at least.
Yeah, that's definitely a blow. You know, they're hoping to have him round out their rotation. Hopefully they can get by in the meantime. And with Cole, I do agree. I think it's going to be two, maybe three more rehab starts. I just want to see him in AAA as opposed to AA, so he can get that, you know, those velocity and movement data. That'd be good to see, even though I do expect the stuff to be a little down, but that's, you know, not really a big deal for someone pitching in the minors, you know, who has such a long track record.
Yeah, and it would be fun just to see him at a AAA park just so we can get some Statcast numbers too. You know, obviously it's nice to have him stretched out a little bit in AA, but yeah, at least in AAA we'll be able to get a little bit more understanding of how he's actually doing with his pitches and his stuff. Some other news, Jason Dominguez was called up today, but he exited after a hit by pitch with an elbow contusion. So, super unfortunate for him. Former number one pick Travis Bezzana was called up by the Guardians. So nice to see him, finally get an opportunity with the show. And then Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who is a pitcher for the Yankees, he made his MLB debut. Was it yesterday or today? Actually, the 29th, 4 innings, 2 runs, 4 hits, 4 walks and 3 strikeouts. So, nothing super impressive, but nonetheless, good to see a debut from him. But going back to Bezzana, any thoughts on picking him up? Like, I'm assuming he's not really going to be in play for 12 teamers, but maybe 15 teamers or like an AL only 12 teamer. Does he have some value in those type of formats?
Yeah, definitely an AL only. It seems like he's going to, you know, play against every righty and maybe a couple lefties, though the Guardians do love the platoon. I think 12 team, I agree. He probably isn't worth your time just yet unless he starts performing. I think 15 teams, the bidding would probably be higher than I'd be comfortable with just because I think the average floor is kind of low. I know he was hitting 287 in AAA this year, but that's actually the only minor league stop where he's had an objectively good batting average. So I think he's a little bit more appealing in OBP formats, but if you have like a weak MI and a 15 teamer, you know, I think he's worth throwing a few bucks at. I just think he's probably going to go for more than I feel comfortable paying.
Yeah. I think the tough part with Bezzana too is I don't really know what he's good at. In college, right? Like it was kind of interesting at Oregon State. He was breaking pretty much every single hitting record that was available to break, except for, I think, homers. He hit 28 in his senior season, or maybe I think it was his junior season actually at Oregon State. But in the minors, he hasn't really shown off too much power. 9 homers total between AA and AAA last season, and that was through 84 games. But I mean, the walk rate is probably the most interesting about him. 17.6% walk rate last year across those two levels, 17.9% walk rate this year through 24 games in AAA. So yeah, he's definitely an asset, at least in OBP leagues. But yeah, it's kind of questionable to know how else he's really going to help a team. Especially in a Guardians lineup that like isn't the scariest thing in the world. They don't necessarily, you know, get a lot of runs in RBI anyways on that team. And so unless you really need like a one category guy in those types of leagues, I question, you know, kind of what value he can actually bring to a fantasy team.
Yeah, you know, he's had a 125 WRC plus or better at every single minor league stop, which is impressive consistency, but it might be the type of line that's better in real life. Although he never had more than 12 steals in the minors before this year, and he was already 8-for-10 in AAA before he got called up. So I'd be at least monitoring how aggressive he is on the bases. You know, maybe he delivers a little bit more than we expect in that regard.
True. Yeah. And I mean, I guess that kind of puts him maybe in the range of like, the only player I'm thinking of right now is Xavier Edwards. I know it's not exactly the best comp, but a guy who can help you at least in steals and at least one ratio, right? Average or OBP, depending on what league you're in. It seems like that's his value right now, and we'll kind of see if the power continues to develop for him. All right, well, that wraps it up for injury news and notes. We are recording this on a Wednesday, so we've got a little less player performance to talk through. So we're actually going to pivot just a tiny bit and talk about Patrick's most recent Is It Legit article, which came out today. And you looked at two players, and then, of course, with Is It Legit, we're just looking at how players are performing and then whether it's something to believe in or something to maybe fade in fantasy. And so we're going to start with Josh Jung of the Texas Rangers, plays third base there. So far this season, he's through 104 plate appearances. He's slashing .312, .375, .559 for a 157 WRC+. He's got four homers on the season, 12 runs, 14 RBI, and one stolen base. And with Josh Jung, I mean, one big thing with him is prospect pedigree. Was a top 50 prospect, but hasn't necessarily done too much with that. I mean, it has had decent stats over the past couple of seasons. But this year, definitely leaping off the board with those ratios at least. And, a little bit of the power too. That's nice to see. But yeah, with Josh Jung, what are your thoughts on him? Is he someone that is kind of breaking out at third base, so to speak? I mean, obviously it's a position that we can always use more solid players in. But yeah, what is your outlook on Josh for the next part of the season?
Yeah, I think that, the position is doing some of the work here in terms of, my level of interest. I kind of ended up on the side of, I think that this is a legit improvement. I'm not like, he's breaking out, he's going to be a stud, but, I kind of landed in the probably legit was my verdict. I mean, he's doing a lot of things that, you'd want to see for a player who's quote unquote breaking out, right? He's swinging the bat about a mile per hour harder. He's making harder contact as a result, but he's not sacrificing contact. His strikeout rate is almost 10 percentage points below where his best season was prior to this. And it's 10 percentage points below his career mark. So, and he's walking more. So he's doing all those good things, simultaneously that a lot of times we see guys making a trade-off, but Jung is actually making an improvement across the board, which is great to see. And, the strong production has him hitting second, third, fourth in the Rangers lineup pretty much every day. We'll see, if he drops it all when Wyatt Langford returns, I think he'll still be pretty close to the heart. So yeah, I feel good about Jung. I think in the past, he's been like a kind of boring guy who gets injured. And I think that combination is just not really super interesting. But now that the batting average ceiling seems a little higher, with the reduced strikeout rate, that's really encouraging. I think that the power, I don't see him pushing over like 20 home runs by much because Texas is a really tough place to hit the ball out. But I do think that he's going to have a really strong average. And, that lineup spot should make the counting stats kind of average to maybe slightly above average. So, yeah, I mean, he was drafted, I think, after pick 300. And I feel pretty good about him, finishing inside kind of the top 200, 175 players based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, some interesting things looking at his batted ball metrics. Hits the ball hard really well. 40.4% hard contact rate. You mentioned in the article, 53.2% hard hit rate. His launch angle has seemed to kind of decrease this season, going from, somewhere over about 12.8 degrees now down to 11.7 degrees. I think the only noticeable thing about that is that his barrel rates seem to really conflict with his hard hit rates. Only 6.3% barrel rate this season, but, the fly ball rates dropped a bit. He seems to be, that line drive rate, which, I mean, it's so hard to tell whether that's skill or not. But at least, the ground ball rate has kind of stayed around the same. The line drive rate has increased by a significant amount. So I don't know if it's a concerted effort by him at the plate to just drive the ball and not worry about, just hitting, trying to hit homers all the time. But at least like the expected average numbers for him look really good. And those obviously are based on those batted ball metrics.
Yeah, exactly. And I do agree, the power ceiling is not as high as maybe people thought it once was. Part of that's the park. Part of that is a relatively flatter swing. And he pulls the ball in the air at roughly like an average or maybe slightly below average rate. So yeah, I think that the kind of the key in terms of improvement that I'm seeing here is in the average department. And you know, third base is a, you know, position where it can definitely be tough to get batting average. So, you know, I think he's a guy who's worth rostering pretty much across the board right now.
Yeah. So I guess with the probably legit or possibly legit verdict, where do you see his average kind of ending up this season? Is he going to finish kind of hopefully above 300? I mean, he's at 320 right now, or is he going to be more of like a 250, 260 hitter?
Yeah, I guess I would say like 260 to 270 the rest of the way, which if he stays healthy would probably put him around, I think 280 is around where that would land, you know. So obviously you're not getting all the good stuff he's done so far, but you know, that'd be a pretty big leap forward from his 260 career average, you know, if he's able to hit 280. You know, 280 is kind of 300 in this day, you know, where walks are up a little bit right now, but batting average hasn't really gone up. So, you know, that's a pretty solid batting average to have on your team.
Yeah. Also kind of interesting numbers. I mean, the slugging is up this year, but you know, he has four homers, but he's hitting a lot of doubles. So that is kind of an interesting thing, but I don't know. Globe Life Field is just, it's so impressively awful for hitters. Like it is truly a horrible park for hitters right now. And so, I don't know. It's interesting to see that Young is at least doing some good stuff there.
Right. And maybe that is, you know, an adjustment where he feels like he struggled a little bit at home and he's, you know, he's hitting a lot of balls to the warning track, or, you know, he doesn't necessarily feel like he has the power. So he's like, all right, I'm going to have a little bit more of a extra base oriented swing as opposed to a home run type swing. It's working for him so far. So yeah, so far so good.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to your next player. We actually talked about him, I think, a couple weeks back. So I feel like I know where you stand on this one without even needing to read the article. But it's Bryce Elder. He's started six games, 31 strikeouts through 37 innings, so averaging a little less than a strikeout per inning. Has three wins on the season, but the most impressive thing are the ratios, 1.95 ERA and a 0.97 whip. And we've seen this from Elder before. I think a couple years back, he had like a really elite run for, you know, maybe 2 months of the season. You mentioned in the article, he's top 10 among qualified starters in innings pitched and ERA. He's added a fifth pitch, what was the pitch that he's added? Is it the cutter?
Yeah, cutter. Yeah,
the cutter, which he's using at 11.6%. So it's not like a pitch that he only throws once in a while. He is using it quite a bit. But he's using it specifically against lefties, which I think we discussed last time, kind of the arsenal that he's got. But yeah, I mean, he seems to have maybe something figured out in the first couple months of the season. But ultimately, yeah, how do you feel about Elder right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, a few weeks ago I was probably pretty harsh and said no way. And I think I've slightly softened, but still, you know, not really seeing a lot that has me feeling like he's made serious improvements. I always like to see someone developing a cutter, especially if they already have fastball sinker. You know, those three fastballs can really work well together. We see so many guys have success with that. So, yeah, I think that development has me, you know, going from he's unrosterable to I might look at him in some moments where I, you know, need a stream if he has an easy matchup and maybe I need a win, right? So his strikeout rate isn't up, right? His walk rate is maybe slightly down. He's not getting any more swings and misses, right? His velo is not up. So I think it really is just the cutter and he's just locked in right now from a command perspective. And I, like I say in the article, you know, we've seen this from him before. And then he slowly kind of erodes your ratios, especially, you know, your whip. He's got a career 1.33 whip. And I just don't feel like he offers enough in the strikeout department to kind of, you know, make up for that. So, yeah, I don't think he's a must roster. I kind of landed on the side of it's probably not legit. You know, I don't think that this is all just complete luck, but I'm not seeing a ton that has me feeling like, you know, he's just a new pitcher all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, some stats that I'd maybe point to that you also point out in the article, he's got a 238 BABIP, which would be a career low for him. He's got a career average of a 293 BABIP. Mm-hmm. The home run per flyball rate is less than half of what it is career averages at 8% right now. His career average is at 18.6%. I wouldn't necessarily call this any sort of improvement. He's actually about the same in terms of his ground ball rate, but he is a 50% ground ball pitcher. Ground ball rate pitcher, so he does induce a lot of those ground balls, although I don't think anything particularly special has happened with Atlanta's defense that would improve those numbers, but maybe, you know, the way that he's approaching hitters, maybe, you know, those are ending up more likely in the gloves of the defense behind him. The hit suppression is kind of interesting. 6.3 hits per nine compared to his career average of 8.8. But yeah, nothing necessarily speaks to the fact that he's changed something to make things better. That's probably the thing that, you know, you're pointing out. You know, underlining stats is not that too much different. And yet he seems to be succeeding pretty well. Interestingly enough, I mean, he's reduced his sinker rate quite a bit. The sinker usage used to be around 40%. Now he's dropped it to 20%. Part of that is because that cutter is now here. Sinker has been really good in inducing ground balls, so maybe it's like a concerted effort of using it only in specific matchups. But yeah, I don't know, just some interesting things to look at. But yeah, I would say that when you look at the stats, there's not a ton that you can say like, oh, that is why things are going well for him.
Right. I think he's replaced a lot of the sinkers against lefties with cutters, which is a good development. You know, you don't really want to be throwing sinkers to opposite handed hitters too much. So yeah, I think that it's like a little wrinkle he's added to his game. And, you know, for me, that just takes him from, you know, not fantasy relevant to, you know, having his moments. You know, I think there's other breakouts we've seen that, you know, have been a little bit more encouraging.
Yeah, he used to use a sinker 30% of the time against lefties. Now it's at 8.2%. And that's pretty much all because that cutter is now part of his arsenal. So I don't know, you know, maybe a new pitch is all what it takes for him to be this elite whip guy. But just knowing Elder's numbers, that's probably not going to be the case for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I would say sell high if you can.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to read more about Patrick's analysis, definitely check out the Is It Legit article. You know, we covered quite a bit of what you wrote, but, you know, it's always helpful to read through kind of what are the stats that you're looking at. And also, you know, how are you coming to those numbers, that verdict on whether, you know, it's someone that you want to trust or maybe someone that you want to sell at this point. So definitely appreciate you writing these articles. All right. Well, moving on to player performances. We got a little bit of a shorter week because, again, we were recording this on Wednesday. But still some interesting players doing some cool stuff over the past week or so. But yeah, who are we going to start out with today?
Yeah, so the 24th, Ryan Clark was on our hitter recap with two trips around the bases for Jonathan Aranda, who is having another solid, you know, second full season. But we're going to be talking about the hot rookie Connor Griffin, shortstop for the Pirates. He was 3-for-4 with a home run, a run, 3 RBIs and stolen base. He had himself a great birthday, first career home run, and also combo meal for the day with the homer and the steal. And yeah, Ryan feels like we're witnessing the birth of a superstar, you know, maybe the next great shortstop in the game alongside Kevin McGonigal, you know, probably the rookie of the year frontrunner at this point. Griffin, more toolsy as opposed to the more polished McGonigal. He's got electric sprint speed, bat speed, and yeah, he's just kind of a really electrifying talent. Ryan feels like we might see a repeat of Bobby Witt's rookie year from a fantasy perspective, where we see, you know, a few homers, but a lot of steals with a rough on-base percentage, though, you know, that can still be pretty valuable in real life and in fantasy. And yeah, it just could be interesting to see, you know, what Griffin's able to put up this year. I think it's a good time to check in. You know, he's about 4 weeks into his career. He's hitting .226 with 2 homers and 7 steals in 24 games. So a lot of steals, the rest of it's a little bit rough. Let's say you're rostering Griffin. I don't have him anywhere, unfortunately, but would you be happy with what you've gotten so far, or were you expecting maybe a little bit more?
I think when we talked about Griffin, I think it was our second episode of the season, because that's when he got called up. We were like, okay, what's a good season for him? Maybe it's a 10-30 season, something like that. And I think he's on pace for that. Whether I'd be happy with the start is maybe a different question, because I think he plays shortstop, which just there's a lot of elite shortstops right now. Francisco Lindor obviously hurt. Xander Bogaerts playing really well all of a sudden. And so to be a shortstop with only 2 homers and 7 stolen bases, I think you mentioned, right? He has 9 runs, 13 RBI right now. To me, that's like a, I don't know, maybe that's a top 12 shortstop, but just maybe, right? So to me, that's maybe a little disappointing compared to maybe some of the other shortstops. Now, people have not been doing so well. I mean, Perdomo, who I was really excited about, has not really done too much this season. Looking at other shortstops, that Bobby Witt hasn't hit a homer. Actually, no, he's hit 1 homer this season so far, right? He's a little bit more of an exception to the rule, where he was a high drafted guy and didn't do too well. But honestly, I don't know if I'd be that excited about Griffin. When I was seeing him getting drafted, it was like around 120 ADP or something like that. And to me, like the guys that are going around him at that range, Jeremy Peña, who hasn't really done too much this year, Trevor Story, who has maybe similar numbers, fewer steals, Seager hasn't had as good of a year either, but has, you know, good RBI and runs. I mean, I guess he's around that area in terms of his stats, but I don't know if I'm that excited about what he's done so far.
Yeah, the counting stats are, you know, lagging a little bit. Fangraphs has him 24th at the position of the play rater, which I think if you give him the same volume as the other guys, he's probably in the top 20, but not that much higher than that. So, yeah, I think this is probably about what I expected, but I wasn't in on him, you know, at his price. So if he's doing about what I expected, that's probably a little bit disappointing for what the people, you know, who liked him were expecting.
Yeah, and I mean, the nice thing is that he does play a, you know, a decent position at shortstop, but I just think that there's other guys who are more interesting than Griffin right now, at least.
Yeah, I think more of an MI type guy. And if you're in a league with, you know, only shortstop and second base, you know, you might be keeping him on your bench a little bit until, you know, you feel like he's getting things going a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. I think if I was on if I was in a 12 teamer that only had one util, no MI spot, like Griffin probably is just on my bench at that point.
Yeah, a little bit of wait and see. Yeah, on the pitching side on the same day, Bayo, listen what I say, a little Red Hot Chili Pepper shout out there was Nick's SP roundup. But I want to talk about Andrew Abbott because Brian Bayo is just not rosterable right now. And Andrew Abbott might unfortunately be heading in that direction. He's had some really rough starts at the beginning of the year. He got the no decision against the Tigers in this one, but he went four innings with five earned, six hits, two walks, and four strikeouts, 11 whiffs, 27% CSW on 89 pitches. And yeah, Abbott's a guy whose success the last year or two has been a little bit puzzling, and it seems like the magic might be wearing off a little bit. He hasn't had a quality start since opening day, and he hasn't had a game where he struck out six or more hitters all season. Do you feel like you can start him anywhere right now? Are you, you know, keeping him on your bench maybe if you have him, hoping he figures things out? What are you thinking right now with Abbott's struggles?
Yeah, I'd be pretty worried. The good thing for him is that he's still doing a good job of home run suppression, despite the fact that he plays for the Reds. But the swing and strike rate's down, CSW's down. The BABIP is up, which is a little scary. It's better. It's more than his career average, so maybe there's some expected regression there. But his fastball's not doing as well, and that's a pitch that he throws half the time. It's about the same velocity, but it's just not doing as well in terms of in the CSW department. And so I think I'm a little worried about Abbott. I mean, I probably didn't pick him up anyways in the sense that I just don't love trusting guys who pitch for the Reds. But yeah, if there was a time to jump ship, now is probably the time. The strikeout rate's really bad at 13.2%. So it'd be hard for me to give a good reason to keep him on your roster right now.
Yeah, I feel pretty similarly. I wasn't really interested in him in draft season just because projections are not a big fan. I do have a waiver claim in right now, my pitcherless league for him, because he's facing the Rockies tomorrow, and that's really all there is to it. So the Rockies just put up like 13 runs on the Reds, so maybe I should cancel my claim because, you know, maybe they're not as bad as we think they are. But yeah, if he can't, you know, at least put together like five innings and two runs or less against the Rockies, you know, I just don't see a reason to roster him until he, you know, seems to be getting back in a groove a little bit.
Yeah, the weird thing is that the Reds are, I think they're the second best team in the National League or third best team.
Yeah, I do not understand how, but they are. I guess yeah, Sal Stewart and Nelly De La Cruz are just, you know, carrying them right now.
Right, but somehow Abbott's 0-2, you know? Like, he doesn't even have a single win, despite the fact that the Reds as a team are doing really well. So yeah, that's just kind of unfortunate that that's how it's working out for him.
Yeah, maybe he'll you know, his rotation spot is secure, so I think, you know, I'll have some time to figure it out, but definitely a rocky start to the year.
Yeah. Moving on to Saturday, thanks to Kevin O'Brien for the No Church in the Wild. Hit a recap article referring to Nathan Church, who we're going to talk about. He went 2-for-4 with two homers, two runs, and four RBI. Currently, he's got 12 runs, 5 homers, 13 RBI, and 3 stolen bases, slashing 250, 289, and 461. And he's playing every day, even against lefties, which maybe speaks more to the quality of the bats that St. Louis has, rather than maybe their trust in him to not be platooned. But his numbers against lefties actually like aren't bad. They aren't better than his splits against righties, but there's probably also just not enough data to say either way that he's bad against lefties. The one thing I noticed about Church, and I think Kevin pointed this out in the article, the underlying StatCast stuff is not great. I think the only number that is like a positive for him is his sprint speed, really good sprint speed, which makes sense. He plays center. He's got a really good arm. He's got an above average barrel rate, which is nice, but he doesn't have a really good hard hit rate. A lot of it is driven by the fact that he's got like a league average launch angle sweet spot rate, which is just like so ultimately specific that it's hard to just like put all your hopes on one batted ball stat. He doesn't walk a lot, which is unfortunate. Wish he could do that to take advantage of the speed. His expected batting average and expected wOBA are below average as well. So even though Church, you know, does have really nice stats, there's not really a lot that gives me confidence to say like, hey, this is a guy who definitely should be picked up. That being said, I do have a waiver claim on him. So, you know, we'll see how that works out. But yeah, thoughts on Church. I mean, he's batting seventh for the Cardinals, so it's also not a great lineup position for him, but he is hot right now. So yeah, any thoughts on picking him up in a specific type of league?
Yeah, we're just a bunch of hypocrites here, huh? We keep saying we don't like guys, and then we're trying to add them. No, Church, I think he has his utility if you want to take a flyer on him in like 15-team five outfield. So, you know, like main event, main event TGFBI type formats. Just because you're wading through so many platoon guys at that point. And if he's playing every day, you know, that at least gives him a little bit better path than some other guys. So, yeah, his bat speed's up, a decent amount from last year, and he's pulling the ball in the air. So I think he's trying to tap into power that we didn't necessarily see from him as a minor leaguer or last year in his small major league sample. But the swing decisions are bad. He chases a lot, but actually doesn't swing that much in the zone. So he's not really making great swing decisions at the plate, despite, you know, some decent production so far. So yeah, I think I'm willing to, you know, maybe start him as my fifth outfielder or keep him on the bench and see, you know, if he continues to perform. But yeah, I don't think he's like a priority add or anything like that.
Yeah, and I guess for context, it's a 14-team, 5-outfielder league. So right exactly with what you were talking about in terms of the league depth that I'd be picking up a guy like Church.
Right. I mean, the amount of everyday players that are on the wire in the outfield in a league like that is probably, you know, single digits. And those are probably guys that you do not want to be going anywhere near.
Yeah, exactly. moving on to pitchers, thanks to Nick for the Swan Jake SP Roundup article talking about Jake Irvin. But we're not going to talk about Jake Irvin. We're going to talk about Shane McClanahan, who I've just been very puzzled about this season on whether to keep him or hold him on my fantasy team. He went 5 innings, no one runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts against my Twins. So maybe there's a little bit of a bump there for how good he did. The 5 innings, I think, is still worrying to me, but it is what it is. That's Shane at this point. Changeup was really good, had a 76% strike rate. He used it a lot, 40% usage. A lot of that was helped by the fact that Matt Wallner just has a horrible eye at the plate and just swings at everything. So that was, I think, a couple of his strikeouts. He was at 95 miles an hour, which I don't know. I don't love him. He's been at 97 the past 2 seasons. That past 2 seasons was also like 2 years ago, right? So Shane Mack, I would love for him to return to the form that he was in like 2022. But I don't know. I just look at his stats. His striker rate's down to 25% for the season. Walk rate's really high at 13%, which I think is, you know, good to see. Nick is pretty encouraged by him at 95 miles an hour. I'm still a little scared. I think the walk rate is real. He walked 2 guys in this one. But 3 starts, his previous, not the previous start before this, but his first 3 starts of the season, he walked 3 guys in each of those. I think he actually walked 4 in 2 of those starts. So the command seems to be a bit of a problem for him. He's not striking guys out as much as his CSW would seem to indicate. And I don't know, I just don't feel like I have a lot of faith in McClanahan right now. And it's hard for me to give a good reason to keep him on my team when there seems to be some other better like upside guys to pick up on the wire. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Shane McClanahan and whether he's a guy that you'd be holding on in like a 12-teamer or something like that?
Yeah, the stuff is diminished, and the field does appear to be a little bit diminished too, right? So I think it's unrealistic to expect him to, be like even maybe 90% of the Cy Young contender that he was a couple of years ago, at least for this season. But yeah, I mean, this outing showed that he is capable of, still having really solid performances. I have him in an OC, which is 12 team, 30 man rosters. I'm not really considering cutting him. I don't start him every week. I think I maybe started him one out of the last 2 weeks, right? So I feel good about him at times, but he hasn't shown, anything that makes him an auto start necessarily. So yeah, I think he's going to have to figure out, how to pitch with this slightly diminished stuff. And it does seem like the changeup is kind of his key to success there. So it's nice that he does have that weapon still that he had when he was really dominant. But yeah, I think if you're in a 12 team, like Yahoo, that's maybe more like 23 or 24 man rosters, and you want to, go out and add a pitcher who's popping up, I can understand that. But in deeper formats, I think I'm holding and using him most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of the classic swatch that, we've been, the term that's been going around pitcherless for the past year, right? Just a lefty with a really good changeup. I mean, the slider is returning really good numbers, 70% strike rate, 14% swing strike rate, which is league average, but 41% O swing rate, so, pretty deceptive nonetheless. But yeah, I kind of just wish that all these kind of really good metrics in terms of his swing and strike rate were turning into actual strikeouts, and that just doesn't seem to be happening right now for him. But yeah, I'm probably still inclined to hold him because the kind of the hope of Shane Mack being, at least something worth rostering would be fun. But it is hard to kind of rely on him, especially in a quality start league. I mean, that's what I got him in, so that's a little bit that's already kind of a ding on him with being on the Rays and then also maybe just not being able to get to six innings every single time.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect more than, like maybe six or seven quality starts from him this year, unfortunately. I think they're just going to be a little careful, and he's still figuring things out a little bit. So going to the 26th, on the hitting side, the sun will come out. Il Demaro was Kyle Stanzl's hitter recap. We have some good puns this week, and I will be talking about the title man, Il Demaro Vargas. He is on the Diamondbacks. If you have no idea who he is, I couldn't blame you. This is kind of the first time he's ever been fantasy relevant, but he took full advantage of the Mexico City series, took the Diamondbacks to a thrilling 12-7 comeback victory in this one against the Padres. They scored 11 unanswered runs. He hit his sixth home run of the season in this one and also had a double, put up another four runs the Diamondbacks did in the eighth inning, thanks to a three-run triple. So he was a single shy of the cycle, kind of the rarest version of that. 3 for 5 with a home run, 3 runs, and 4 RBI. And he, I think, is a top 10 hitter right now. I think I saw a stat that he's raised like his career OPS 30 points this month, which is funny because he's 34 years old and he's been in the majors for like 10 years. So very much a career, month that he's having. But where are you at on Vargas? Are you kind of just rostering him anywhere you can until he has a bad week? Are you seeing anything different that makes you think that he's actually going to stick, having this success?
Yeah, I did pick him up in one league. I forget which what, it was one of, I mean, one of my smaller leagues, I think. So I have not paid up the big bucks to for him in like a league like NFC leagues. He went for how much did he go for? He went for 62 in my TGFBI Fab run this past week, and I don't know. I don't think he's necessarily worth that, but the way he's playing right now is really impressive. Really good eye at the plate. I guess the weird thing is that even though he has six homers, he doesn't necessarily have like the elite batted ball metrics that would scream, sort of a power hitter. Seems like he's more patient at the plate. That seems to be his thing. Doesn't generate a lot of walks though, so he's more of a guy that just, puts balls in play. I don't know. I mean, I think if you have him on your team, you ride with him. If he's on your waiver wire, pick him up, have some fun. But I just don't really know how much value he truly has because we've literally have never seen this before from him. And I don't know if there's a lot of metrics to really back it up, other than, hey, his the very forward stats look really good, and there's no way to explain it with the underlying stats. But nonetheless, I think it's at least enjoyable to see a guy like him do well in your age 34 season.
Yeah, it's fun to see a little renaissance. I believe he's up to 25 game hit streak after tonight. He's 2 for 3 tonight. So yeah, just fun to see. It's not a day and age where we see a lot of hit streaks like that, which is cool. He doesn't strike out a lot, like you said, but he also doesn't walk. So he's really just spraying a lot of line drives around the field and taking full advantage. Really the only difference that I see in terms of his career, it's not bat speed, right? It's not even hard hit stuff. He's not hitting the ball any harder. He's just pulling the ball in the air more, which I think is where the power is coming from. So yeah, I think that, at least there's one change that we're seeing here, right? That tells you that the power isn't a complete fluke. But, I don't think that he's a great hitter all of a sudden. But I have him in one league like you. So I'm just gonna keep going with it while it's still good, and won't feel bad about cutting bait when I have to. It helps that, second base is really weak. I have him and Angel Martinez, right, are my two second basemen, and neither one of them I feel great about long term. So I'm probably just going to go with whoever is, having the better last few days, and until I see something better come up.
Yeah, 11.8. Actually, I should say career average of a 15.7 pull in the air rate. But this year he's at a 29.2% pull air rate. So, really tapping into that pull side power. And that's definitely at least something you could try to make a concerted effort towards, I think. But yeah, it is funny that literally every other one of his stats are kind of just like, eh, they're about the same as the previous year. Like even his max EVs are actually lower than they've been in some other years that he's had. So, yeah, very, very interesting numbers for Ildamaro for sure.
Right. I mean, he has a 26 home runs and 16 stolen bases in his career and 480 games, right? So that just tells you how much of an aberration this is. But yeah, I think, you just enjoy it while it lasts. But I think even like a bad 4 or 5 days and I'm, moving on.
Yeah.
So another kind of pop-up guy, but someone who's much younger on the pitching side, Dalla Skills, y'all, was Nick's SP roundup for Chase Dollander, part of this resurgent Rockies pitching staff. Nick has had his eye on him for a few weeks and is at the point where he might even be startable in Coors. He was on the road in this one against the struggling Mets, but he put up a gem. 7 innings, none earned, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts, 13 whiffs, 28% CSW, and stretched all the way out to 105 pitches to get the win against the Mets. It's a four seam that leads the way. It has an elite approach angle at 1.9, height adjusted approach, vertical approach angle, at least outside of Coors. He's going to lose a couple of inches of ride in Coors because of the thinner air, but that's okay. He has a pretty deep arsenal. He's also got a gyro slider that is 87, 88, but has a couple extra inches of sweep that, make it better than your typical gyro. And he's also working on a changeup and a couple of breaking balls that he has feel for kind of in and out. Nick noted this wasn't even the best version of Dollander because his secondaries weren't super reliable, but the fastball was so dominant that he was able to have a ton of success anyway. Nick is, saying that he could understand benching him against Atlanta in Coors Field, but he feels like at this point Dollander should be started unless it's against an elite offense in Coors Field. So we always talk about how Coors is undefeated, right? We ignore all Rockies pitchers. And do you think Dollander is a guy who needs to be rostered and he's gonna beat Coors for the first time since like Ubaldo Jimenez is the guy that comes to mind, right? Or I guess Kyle Freeland had one really good year. So is Dollander the new kind of the new wave of that? Can he really get it done like he has so far?
It's interesting when you look at him because his he I mean he relies on the four seamer and then the sinker is his next most used pitch, I believe. Yeah, home road is about the same, and then it's really like the breaking pitches, right, that are the ones that don't work super well when you're in Coors. But he's got a 19 or almost 20% usage on his slider, good for a 17.6% swinging strike rate when he's at home. So, yeah, something's really working with the breaking stuff for him, which is impressive. I mean, I still hesitate to roster any guys who play for the Rockies, and maybe this is just a nice little blip for him, but at least he kind of seems to have the pitches to make it work in Coors. I don't really have any better analysis for that other than like, hey, it's kind of working for this first month, and if you want to take a stab of it, go ahead. I think it is kind of weird though that it's taken what are we at, like 2 months, I guess, for it to work out for him. Like I think it could just go as quickly as it came in terms of his quality of stuff. But yeah, I mean, for now it seems to be working out really well for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely the Rockies' best pitcher, but I'm not sure that he's the exception to the rule of don't trust Coors Field. Obviously, it's still early in the year; it's cold there, so this is the easiest time to pitch there. So, I am kind of like you. I'm mostly just going to watch from a distance. I think that he's at least worth rostering in most formats, but you still need to pick and choose your spots pretty carefully because there, I agree, there could easily be an outing where, he just completely blows up and, undoes a lot of the great work that he's done so far.
Yeah, and I mean, I should say the home road splits aren't very good right now because he's literally had two starts at home. One of them was a really good start against San Diego, 6 innings, only one earned run, 9 strikeouts. The other one was kind of a meh one against Philly, 4.1 innings, 6 strikeouts on that one. So he does have a penchant for getting strikeouts, but I don't think we, I still don't think he's a guy that you would trust in Coors because I just don't think we have the numbers to say, like, yeah, he's that good. Away from Coors, yeah, absolutely. I think he's definitely worth rostering. And it might just work out schedule wise that he pitches a lot more away from home than at home. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious what how he's going to really end up when he actually has more games in Colorado.
Yep, it'll be a big test against Atlanta this weekend. I guess, if he conquers that one, maybe we got to take him, a little more seriously.
All right, moving on to the 27th. Gotta go to Mo's was Ryan Amore's hitter recap tag. Referring to Moises Ballesteros, I believe. That's how I pronounce it. But yeah, we're not gonna talk about Ballesteros. We're gonna talk about actually another rookie shortstop. I didn't actually realize you talked about Connor Griffin, but this kind of works out really well. JJ Weatherholt, currently he went 1 for 4 with a homer, a run, and an RBI in this start. He has second base and shortstop eligibility, at least in ESPN. I'm not sure where he, what his eligibility looks like in other leagues, but I think he's maybe second base only in some leagues that don't count his minor league stats. But anyways, yeah, he actually had a really nice game in this one. Ruined my fantasy league though because I had Dennis Santana who gave up a 2-0 lead in this one, giving up 4 runs. One of those was to JJ Weatherholt, and yeah, that it was a game timing homer, was his only hit of the night, but he has gone yard in 3 straight games, and then added a 3-run game on Tuesday. He was the 7th overall pick out of West Virginia 2 summers ago, had a lot of traction, I think, in this offseason. Definitely a lot of people were, calling for him to be on the opening day roster. He ended up being on the opening day roster, and he's currently slashing 241, 368, 435. So really solid numbers for a rookie. Last year, he had 17 homers and 23 stolen bases across 109 games in AAA. So if you compare that to Connor Griffin, Griffin, I believe, was in AA last season, but had 20-ish homers and 60-ish stolen bases. So, very similar kind of like homer speed guys, for JJ and Connor. He's currently 6th on the player rater among second basemen. He's got 6 homers, 25 runs, 14 RBI, and 4 stolen bases. And I think he has the advantage of being at second base, right? It's a little more sparse of a position, as we kind of just talked about with Vargas, compared to what Griffin's situation is in being at shortstop. But yeah, just kind of considering that, kind of the same question you asked about Connor. If you had JJ right now, would you feel pretty happy about what he's done so far this season?
Yeah, I think you got to be thrilled. I mean, he's scoring a ton of runs and he's showing definitely more power than I expected. I mean, obviously the pace isn't going to sustain, but this is like a 35-25 pace right now, right? So I was kind of thinking he'd be like a little bit of a bland, 15-15 with a passable batting average, but he's pulling the ball in the air, so he is trying to tap into that power. And he's got really good play skills too, right? He doesn't strike out a lot, so he's getting the most of his at bats. And yeah, just doing a really nice job setting the table for the Cardinals right now. I think he, especially in OBP leagues, he was over 400 at every stop in his minor league career in OBP, and he's at 368 right now. So he's clearly really strong in that area. So yeah, at a thin second base position, I think he's doing everything you could have hoped for and more right now.
Yeah, I agree that the 6 homers is probably a little bit of an aberration for him. But 12% walk rate is great. I have him in an OBP league, so I really appreciate that. He bats first for the Cardinals, so even though, it's an offense that we're not super excited about, that still gives him more opportunities to get on base, get more runs, which I really like. He's got 25 runs on the season right now, so we're about, what, a fifth of the way through the season. So I'm not saying that he's going to get to 100 runs by the end of the year, but that is not out of the question right now. He's certainly on pace for that. So, yeah, really good numbers from him. I managed to pick him up in one of my fantasy leagues, like basically that first weekend when we found out that Chase DeLauder, JJ Weatherholt were all going to be available. Like, yeah, it was kind of like a get your rookies while you can. And yeah, I think he's been really solid, especially at second base. I've been pretty happy about that with Gleyber Torres not really performing up to snuff this season.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I noticed in like looking at the Savant stuff is I feel like he's doing like almost all of his damage against fastballs. He's got all six of his home runs against fastballs. I think that includes, you know, sinkers, cutters, four seamers, all that type of stuff. So, you know, obviously teams are going to adjust as they get a little more data on him. So maybe he'll start to get pounded a little bit more with, you know, off speed and breaking stuff. And let's see if he can make the adjustment to that. So, yeah, he's doing everything you want right now. You know, I would be surprised to see some slumps because he is young, but so far so good.
Yeah. Very much also just a pull side hitter. All his homers, except for one, it looks like, have been to right field. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the Ron Hair of the Dog. SP Roundup article talking about Ron Hair Suarez, who I got to eat crow on this one. He had 8 innings, no runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. And I think 2-3 weeks ago, I said I had no faith in Suarez. And he goes out and it's basically been really good the last 2 starts. 34% CSW in this one, 14 whiffs. And yeah, he's doing really well across the edges of the zone, all 5 pitches. He's using really well against righties. The cutters are up and in, sinkers and changeups down and away. Curveballs are low. 4 seamers are kind of the ones that pitchers kind of fall off. And just really good, surprising righties with his pitches. The problem is extension's still not great. The sinker doesn't have as much movement as it used to. And he's got a 39% put away rate right now, which is pretty high according to Nick. And still, you can't knock the stats. In his last 4 starts, he's had 3 scoreless outings. Obviously, you're riding the hot hand with Suarez right now. But over the course of the season, do you feel like he's able to sustain this, or would you rather trade him while the value is up?
Yeah, I think I would be, you know, fielding offers, but not necessarily rushing to trade him. He's a guy who, whenever he's doing poorly, I can't figure out why he's doing so poorly. Whenever he's doing well, it's just like, okay, I guess he's in a rhythm now and we're rolling with it. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he's shown over like kind of the last 5 years that when he's on the mound, he's generally going to be solid. The one thing I don't believe is the whip right now. You know, he's got a 1.26 career whip and right now he has a 0.94. With a 231 BABIP, which is extremely low, especially for a ground ball pitcher. He looks like a little bit more of a fly ball guy this year than years past, which is definitely unusual for him. It doesn't look like there's huge arsenal changes, so I'm not exactly sure what's behind that. But yeah, I think if your team needs a better ERA, he's one of the best guys to turn to. You know, I just wouldn't be surprised if there's some outings where he hurts your whip a little bit and also doesn't get a ton of strikeouts, but yeah, Astros coming up this weekend. That'll be a really good test and find a way to see where he's at. You know, if he's really on a heater, he'll roll through that one too.
Yeah, the weird thing with him is the strikeout rate has actually gone down this season. Part of that is his 3 pretty decent starts. He's had 2 outings with 8 innings, and then he hasn't had a lot of strikeouts in like the ones that he only goes like 4 or 5 innings. So the kind of the efficiency things, he gets dinged by that a little bit. So I wouldn't say he's still like any elite pitcher, right? Despite what these numbers might say. But he's at least someone who's just worth holding on to, right? He's not really waiver wire quality right now. Like he might have been in previous seasons. He's still firmly someone that you probably are keeping on your roster.
Yep. I mean, he's never made 30 starts. You know, he's never gotten to 160 innings, but he usually gets pretty close. So I think while he's rolling like this, you just got to plug him in. I don't think you can overthink it.
Yeah. Kind of concerning an 18% home run per fly ball rate, but I'm curious how much of that is because he now pitches in Fenway as opposed to Citizens Bank Park. But yeah, some interesting numbers for Suarez for sure.
Yeah. So to wrap things up with the player performances, our last day will be Tuesday the 28th. The Bryce is Right by Griffey Geis was our hitter recap for Bryce Matthews, who's having a nice little stint with the Astros in the outfield, but he's still got a little bit more work to do for me to get on the fantasy radar. So I'm going to talk about a first-round star who's off to a great start. That's Ellie De La Cruz, shortstop for the Reds. He was 3-for-4 with a home run, 2 runs, 4 RBIs, and 2 steals, so a combo meal plus an extra steal there. I had a lightly hit single earlier in the game, but then he had a hard hit single later on and a 376-foot homer in the eighth. And it's been a power kind of surge this year for Ellie. He's hitting right now 291, 362, 590. So that's good for a 393 xWOBA and a 158 WRC plus. So yeah, Ellie is a guy who was going in the first round largely because of his speed, but he's actually showing a really good batting average and he's got 10 homers and 8 steals. So are you kind of buying into the power surge here? Do you feel like it's just more of a moment and Ellie's going to go back to being a great speed and, you know, kind of okay option in the rest of the categories?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his bat tracking page on Savant. Obviously, you know, take all these numbers with grains of salt, but it's interesting to look at nonetheless. He's shortened his swing speed a little bit by about 3 inches. So, you know, something's very small there, but nonetheless, something that could help a little bit. He is squaring the ball up a little bit more. And so I don't know if that's just a thing where he's able to, I don't know, see where the ball's coming a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, he is topping the charts right now in EVs. An average EV of 90 is almost 96 miles an hour, which is 5 miles an hour better than, or sorry, 4 miles an hour better than his career average. Hard hit rates are up for him as well. Strikeout rates are going down. I mean, I think it's believable in the sense that, like, hey, he's always hit the ball hard, and this year he just seems to be hitting it a little bit harder and a little bit more consistently. And I think maybe the more interesting thing to look at is the fact that, like, his strikeout rate has gone down just a tiny bit. Compared to his career average, I mean, last year we saw it, like, go down by a lot, down to 26%. It's a little bit up this year. But it seems to indicate that he's making better swing decisions, at least at the plate, compared to maybe what we've thought about Ellie in the past. And so maybe that's the thing that's driving his power, is that he's just more comfortable at the plate right now, and he's a little bit better at not just swinging at everything.
Yeah, he's also lifting the ball a lot more. I feel like a lot of the changes we're seeing here are stuff that we've been waiting for him to do, and also waiting for other really tooled up guys like O'Neill Cruz to do, you know, hit the ball in the air more, be a little bit more selective at the plate. And he's really reaping the benefits. He doesn't have great contact skills, right? Probably never will, but if he's able to get more batted balls in the air, that could go a long way for his power. He's still very infrequently pulls the ball in the air. So I don't think we're, you know, going to see him become like a 40 home run guy, but yeah, if he's, you know, attacking a little bit more uphill and he's able to lift the ball a little bit more, I think to get into 30 for the first time in his career, you know, is within the realm of possibility. And when you combine that with the 40 steal pace he's on right now, right, that's a guy who could get back into the top five. So yeah, I wasn't necessarily in on him because I did have concerns about the batting average and the power, but he's making some really promising changes so far.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he's just never going to be great at the plate in terms of his whiff rates and strikeout rates. Interesting things to look at, though, through 80 batted ball events, which is when things, I think, start stabilizing, at least when you look at a rate basis. Barrel rate's at 17.5%. So it seems legit that he, like you said, is lifting the ball a little bit more. He's hitting the ball harder. Those seem to indicate that, yeah, this is real. I think it's impressive to see him kind of improve year after year, because like the other name you mentioned with O'Neill Cruz, he's still striking out a lot, even though the numbers look pretty solid this year too.
Yeah. And I think Ellie was playing through a minor injury down the stretch last year. I can't remember exactly what it was, but you know, maybe we are seeing that was impacting him to some extent.
Yeah. I'm really curious. I want to see how much his chase rate has improved this season. I don't know if you have.
I think a couple percentage points. Yeah, it's down a few percentage points, it looks like, depending on, you know, where you look. But it's always been decent. Now I think it's comfortably above average, which is cool to see.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just looking at his StatCast numbers, the only percentile. So I was just curious, but he went from the 46th percentile last year to 80th percentile right now. So he seems to be doing. Oh yeah, 28% to 23%. So. Yeah, seems to be at least doing a little bit better at not just going after pitches outside the zone.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the pitching side, to wrap us up here, another highly drafted guy, but he's off to a rougher start. That's Logan Gilbert. He got the no decision for the Mariners at the Twins in this one. 5 innings, 1 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. A pretty solid outing, but not spectacular. 11 whiffs, 28% CSW, and 93 pitches. And this isn't really an aces going to ace situation here. It's more of an aces going to mid situation. Nick feels like maybe it's time to remove that label from Logan Gilbert just because he is off to a slow start. 4.03 ERA, 1.29 whip, and a 24% strikeout rate. And he's just kind of fighting to locate his pitches properly. So, you know, Gilbert hasn't really been terrible. He's just been slightly underwhelming so far this year. And what's your concern level? You know, did you get to watch this and see anything, or do you have him on any of your teams? And how are you feeling about Gilbert?
Yeah, I wasn't able to watch the start. I was more just scoreboard watching this one. And I don't know. I didn't feel great going into the season about drafting Gilbert, only because the numbers last year, like the ERA was really high, even though the strikeout rates were incredible. But it felt more like an aberration to me than just like, hey, he's actually legitimately doing something good. Which, I don't know, weirdly is like has been all the Seattle pitchers for me. You know, like I was high on Luis Castillo going into the season. He has not done super well. Kirby, I wasn't super excited about, but felt like he'd be decent. Yeah, I don't know. Gilbert, I mean, the disappointing thing with Gilbert is that he just hasn't had the strikeout rates that he has previously. But then you look at his career numbers and you're like, yeah, these are actually kind of in line with what he's done. I think maybe the surprising thing is just how bad his whip is. I don't really have anything to speak to why that is the case other than, he's not walking guys more. It's not because of that. And I'm just looking at his fastball. It's a little bit lower of his zone rate. So I don't know if he's just like getting into bad counts, like hitter counts earlier than he was in the past. And then that's just resulting in him throwing, you know, more of a hitter's pitch or having to deal with being in the hitter's counts, you know, trying to, and ends up putting the ball in locations that don't help him. But yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of weird that he's just giving up more hits this season, and that's what's leading to the worst whip.
Yeah, I think some of it is regression in the strikeout rate, right? He was 32% last year, but his career is 26%, and he's at 24.4 right now. So just less at-bats, ending with a strikeout. But that's not, you know, that doesn't explain all of it. I think there's some bad BABIP luck happening here, but he also is giving up a little bit more hard contact, a couple more line drives, so... Yeah, it's a little bit concerning. I think I would be, you know, open to acquiring him if you can get a slight discount. But he is getting, you know, a couple fewer whiffs, and he's changed his arsenal a lot, which,
yeah,
you know, it's always good to see guys, you know, try new things generally. But it's also, you know, did he need to add a cutter? Does he need to be throwing a splitter and a changeup now, right? He's throwing 6 pitches, and, you know, maybe it's just difficult for him to really have a coherent approach with a wider arsenal. And he is a guy who kind of changes his arsenal, has changed it a lot over the course of his career. So, yeah, maybe he's still figuring things out with this new set of pitches. But, yeah, I think I'm a little bit concerned. But, you know, if the guy who owns him in your league is really concerned, you know, I'd be open to acquiring him. I think he has a long enough track record of success.
Yeah, I mean, you look at these two pitches that he's added, his cutter and his changeup. He's brought down his slider usage as a result of that, but his slider was really good. 35% CSW last year, 16.6% swing strike rate. It's actually gone up in his swing strike rate, even though he's lowered the usage. It's down to an almost 20%. But the cutter is like a pretty decent pitch, 32% CSW. The changeup's got a 31.6% CSW. You know, they're not bad pitches, and you know, they're not, the cutter is giving up a little bit more hits. It's got a 412 BABIP on it, but some of that's noise because there's only so many batted ball events for these pitches. I kind of agree. I actually like pitchers with more arsenals, with a bigger arsenal, but sometimes the kitchen sink isn't always the best solution. Like, I mean, the guy that comes to mind for me is Zebby. He just has so many pitches, but he doesn't know what to do with them sometimes, right? The command just isn't there for him. And I don't think that's the issue with Gilbert. So I don't know. I'm kind of with you that, like, it might be a good time to buy if you can, if someone's just getting tired of what they're getting from him. I don't know. There's just some weird caution, that the flag that comes in my head when I think of Gilbert, and just that I don't know if all of this is what he did last year is believable and whether he can get back to that level.
Right. The slider has been his best pitch historically from like a result or from a PLV or stuff perspective, one of them. And his fastball has kind of been his foundation from a, you know, approach and a results perspective. And he's thrown both of them less. So, you know, it's just a little bit kind of confusing.
Yeah, for sure. But it'll be interesting to see how this goes on, right? Like, it's only the first couple of weeks of the season. It's not like his numbers are atrocious. I mean, they're not, the ERA is not something you like with it being at a four, but maybe it is just bad BABIP luck or something like that.
Yeah, one good start and things look a lot more normal.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for player performances. And now we're going to move into streamers. And I know I suggested some guys last week. We're not going to talk about that because a lot of those starts actually haven't happened yet. So, yeah, kind of recapping the week before, I know we had a couple two-star guys that hadn't gone yet. So, yeah, what's the final verdict on the streamers from 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, so I think it's a 2-win, 1-push, 1-loss record for the week to go to 5 wins, 4 pushes, and 3 losses on the season. Max Meyer was one of the wins. Both of his outings, he went 5 innings or 5 1/3, total of 2 earned runs and 13 strikeouts and a sub-1 whip. Unfortunately, no wins, but good ratios and strikeouts. Spencer Arrighetti was great. He got wins in both of his starts. First one was 5 innings, 2 earned with a bad whip, but the second one was 7 innings, 1 earned with 8 strikeouts and a .57 whip, so big win there. Steven Matz, pretty clear loss, 3 innings, 4 earned and a bad whip. And JT, again, I'm calling it a push. He left the second one a little early with an injury that seems to be minor. He didn't get any wins. He had 8 2/3 innings with 8 strikeouts and 3 earned and 1.27 whip in his two starts, so kind of just mediocre production there. So moving to this week, I might as well name it the Jameson Taillon segment, right? He is still only 17% rostered on Yahoo, 58 on CBS, so a little high for a streamer, but just wanted to make sure that people get him in there. He's got a great two-step home against Cincinnati and at Texas, which, as we talked about, great place to pitch. Good wins, quality starts, and whip play. He's striking out more guys this year, but I'm not sure that's really going to sustain. He might, you know, give up some home runs, right? I think he's better whip than ERA, but overall, this is a really good setup for him. Second one is Jansen Junk, someone we have featured earlier this year. Still really low rostered, even though he just shut out the Dodgers. 10% CBS, 3% Yahoo. He's got 2 home starts against the Phillies and Nationals, so one struggling lineup that we think should be good and one lineup that's doing well that we don't necessarily believe in. He's got lower strikeout ceiling, but should have good ratios, especially whip. And 2 home starts, I think, is always good to see. You know, guys typically pitch just a little better at home, so you feel slightly more confident. And then this one is kind of a double Nationals. Cade Cavalli and Foster Griffin. Cade Cavalli is a higher ceiling option. He is going to get home against Minnesota and at Miami in a 2-start. And then Foster Griffin is just at Miami. Griffin's the one who's been pitching a lot better from a results perspective, whereas Cavalli has the better stuff. Cavalli actually just pitched tonight, and I wanted to see how he did. It looks like his velo is about the same as it has been this year, but he had a 37% CSW, which is great. And he went 6 innings, 8 hits, 2 runs, and 10 strikeouts. So, yeah, Cavalli's been showing a lot of strikeout upside in his recent starts, so I would feel comfortable, you know, jumping back in, but that definitely is the more volatile option.
Yeah, Cavalli, obviously, nice comeback. Was it last year from injury, I believe? So, you know, good prospect pedigree for him, for sure. But yeah, Jameson Taillon, just, I saw that name and was like, here we go, he's back. I've been kind of waiting for Taillon to get back on the streamer segment because he is like, he's absolutely that like premium guy who you really like, but you just can't keep him on your roster because sometimes the lows are too low. I think I had him actually, I drafted him in my pitcherless staff league. And I think I dropped him after like week 2 or week 3. So maybe it's time to go back to Taillon and pick him up for this this two-step. Because, Reds carpet and at Texas feels really good as a couple of starts.
Yeah, man, I think he went 7 against the Padres today and got the win. But he also gave up home runs to Miguel Andujar and Nick Castellanos. So that tells you that anybody can get Taillon. But generally, he's able to put up a quality start. So. Yeah, you know, especially when you get him at Wrigley with the wind blowing in, you know, that's a great opportunity to stream.
Yeah, and that's why he's only a good win and whip play and not necessarily an ERA guy. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the streamer segment and this episode. You can find us on This Week PL on Twitter. Send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at the John Cuh, Patrick at pfitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever else you listen to your podcast. If you enjoy what you're listening to, leave us a 5-star review if you're liking what you're listening to and want to hear us for the rest of the season. Lastly, sign for Pitchless Pro. By doing so, you can join us on the Pitchless Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. Obviously, there's a lot of questions going on all the time in our Discord, whether that's just specifically regarding pitchers, regarding hitters. You know, Dynasty guys always talking as well, but it's just good baseball conversation. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.